For weeks, we talked about the what ifs. The what if, what if, what if. Well, what if has turned into what is, or at least what will be. As we record this right now, DeAndre Hopkins has not officially signed with the Tennessee Titans, but he has said on social media he's going to do it. Mike Vrabel has confirmed it publicly, and the reaction from Titans fans seems to be equal parts relief and euphoria, I would say, as the situation at wide receiver, which has been a huge question mark throughout the offseason, suddenly gets a whole lot better, and how the offense will work, I think, gets a whole lot clearer. We will look at this and some other things in this episode of the Believe in Titans podcast with our usual lineup, former Titans cornerback Denard Walker. Denard, how are you?
I'm doing good this evening, David. Yourself?
Doing great, thank you. And John Glennon of the Nashville Post. John, how are you?
I'm doing well. Hope you guys are.
Doing good. Denard, I got to start with you. I think you were probably the most confident throughout this process that Hopkins would decide on the Titans. He ultimately accepted a 2-year contract that's heavy with incentives, but not as heavy as it seems as what New England and Kansas City had offered him, a little more, I guess, a certainty in terms of what he's going to earn from the Titans. What was your reaction when you heard it? Having had a little time to digest it, what do you make of the decision now and what it means to this offense?
Well, it means that this offense has gotten like about 90 times better. I mean, going into the season, if you would have told me, David, that Chris Moore, Nick Westbrook, Akine, Cal Phillips, and Racy McMath, Mason Kinsey, Colton Dow, if you would have told me that this group was going to beat you or they were going to add a different dimension to this Titans offense, I would have told you you're crazy. But now when you add D-Hop, you're talking about one player is equivalent to about 20 great players, and this would be a huge. I heard about the deal. It can be somewhere about a 2-year, $26 million, up to $6 million, excuse me, in incentives. But, excuse me, David, but you know who you have to thank the most for this deal being done or getting done?
Who's that?
Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
I'm saying, Bill Belichick, thank you so much. Your ego, whatever it is, ego got into the way, because the Patriots, it looked like everything was going their way. I mean, what, they had about $17 million in cap space. So, I mean, they had the money to do it. And the fact that he opted to sign six special teams players, and he's going to make Juju Smith-Schuster his number one. Tennessee, hey, they won out of this deal. So I'm glad for the Titans and Rand Carthon getting this done.
Yeah, John, a huge move, I think, for Rand Carthon in terms of kind of putting the fan base at ease. You know, he's a guy who preached patience throughout the offseason. Now has made a move that more so than any move I think he's made throughout the offseason, you could argue, and probably wouldn't argue much otherwise, right? That this is a move that makes the Titans clearly better.
I would absolutely agree. You know, to me, you know, as you look at the Titans, a few days ago as they were getting ready for camp, you saw two gaping holes, two big, big question marks. One was wide receiver in my mind, and the other is offensive line. And I'm sure, you know, later on in the podcast, we'll talk a little bit about what may be happening on the offensive line in terms of potentially adding George Fant. But what we know now for nearly certain, he hasn't quite signed the papers yet, but that DeAndre Hopkins is going to be coming aboard. That makes a huge difference. I mean, there was not, you know, we've talked about this before, there's not a huge gap, I don't think, between the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Tennessee Titans last year. You know, you remember it came down to the last game for who wins the division title. Titans are winning down in Jacksonville until Josh Dobbs, turns the ball over. So to me, you add a wide receiver of this caliber, assuming he is still top flight wide receiver, and I'm sure we can get into this as well also, assuming he still has his health, and again, we can get into this as well. But that's a massive, massive move, I think, for the Titans. And something that's going to really impact Treylon Burks, going to impact Chig Okonkwo, Derrick Henry, the list goes on. So huge win for Rand Carthen. Really an impressive start to his first year.
Yeah, I said it in the open that there's so much more clarity, I think, with the offense right now. You look at it, Treylon Burks as your number two receiver, with the potential to eventually grow into a number one, feels a lot different than Treylon Burks being forced to be the number one receiver because there's clearly nobody else, right? Chig Okonkwo now looks like a matchup nightmare for defenses, where the Titans will be able to find matchups that defenses don't want because they have to deal with DeAndre Hopkins and Derrick Henry and Treylon Burks in most cases ahead of that. Derrick Henry's job looks so much easier right now because teams aren't going to want to just put eight and nine guys in the box all the time, knowing that you've got a one-on-one nightmare out there in DeAndre Hopkins, a guy who is one of the best in the NFL at contested catches. And all you have to do is throw it up to him sometimes, and he'll make the play. And Denard, we saw this too on Twitter. He talked about how he loves having haters, and he seems to enjoy the reaction from places like Kansas City and New England to his decision. You get the sense that this guy at 31 years old is still really motivated too, and not just, wasn't just out there looking for a paycheck necessarily, that this guy, for all he's accomplished, still feels like he has some things to prove to some folks. Do you see it that way?
Absolutely, David, because he's 31 years old. This is probably a 2-year deal. So we don't know what's going to happen after that. But David, there's something that defines greatness in this league, and there's something that has eluded D Hop. And you know what that is?
Super Bowl.
Super Bowl. Super Bowl. I mean, that's what you're defined by in this league, not what you get compensated. That's what people, when they look at you, they want to see how many Super Bowls have you won when you finish up over your career. So he has no Super Bowl rings. And I'll tell you what, now he's here in Tennessee. We're talking about, this is a great franchise. You have consistency at the coaching, with Mike Vrabel's been here for what, the last 6 years. If you look at his assistants, I mean, everything's intact for D Hop. But David, what I love about this move is it has nothing to do with money. Well, it has everything to do with money. But if you're D Hop, you're looking at a team that's just 2 years off from winning the AFC, and you're looking at an organization right now, other than last year, they didn't have the pieces in play, especially when you're talking about the perimeter game. So now that you add D Hop, what do you get? It adds depth, but what you also get with D Hop is you get experience, David. If you look at this receiving core, I mean, just look at the receivers other than Chris Moore, who's 30 years old. You got Nick, who's 26, Racy's 24, Cal's 24. I mean, they're young and they're inexperienced. That's what D Hop is going to bring to this receiving core, and he's going to bring an added dimension to this offense. David, you alluded to the fact, and I can't get this out of my mind. You said it best, that he's probably the best receiver going, when you talk about contested balls. And David, I went back to that game in 2020 against Buffalo. How in the world did he make that catch over three of the top safeties in the league and one of the best corners in Tre'Davious White to win that game against who was that? Buffalo, I'm sorry. And what was that? They end up winning 32-30. That's crazy.
He's done it to the Titans his whole career too. I mean, this team has seen it. The real challenge, I guess, will be for him and Ryan Tannehill to figure one another out, because D Hop is a guy who will who will improvise a little bit. I remember a game here at Nissan Stadium a couple of years ago when he was still with Houston, and he and Deshaun Watson had a real good understanding of one another. I talked to several of the defensive assistant coaches after, a couple of days after that game, and it was one where Watson got forced off his spot and Hopkins was running a deep in, and for there was no reason for him to do it, but he stuck his foot in the ground, turned and went back toward the sideline, and Deshaun Watson saw it happening and put the ball right on the money for a huge, I think it was a big third. It was like third and 12, and ended up being a 15-yard gain or something ridiculous, where it clearly wasn't drawn up that way, but those two read each other perfectly, understood it. And Tannehill's a guy who does like, he's pretty particular. That's one thing he will talk to his receivers. I think you should be doing this when you see this, and those guys are going to have to work that out. But they're both pros, and they've both done it a long time. I would assume that's not going to be a huge process to go through. There is, of course, history that DeAndre Hopkins is going to have to fight against here when you talk about the Titans and highly accomplished wide receivers late in their careers, or relatively late in their careers. And I'll just run down the list real quickly. Carl Pickens in 2000, Eric Moulds in 2007, Randy Moss in 2010, Andre Johnson in 2016, and then Julio Jones most recently here. None of those moves paid off anywhere near the way the Titans planned or hoped. And I mean, you're talking about different quarterbacks, different head coaches, different coordinators, different general managers, and yet this thing has worked out almost the same every time. John, you talked about it. Assuming he's healthy, assuming he is the receiver he has been, can you assume those things? Is there much more reason for optimism here that DeAndre Hopkins will break this spell, so to speak?
I think there is. First, I was going to mention, you guys were talking about motivation just a minute ago, and I wanted to add to that also. To me, the very fact that he signed when he signed, to me, is a sign that he's pretty excited to get going, and he's pretty excited about playing with the Tennessee Titans. Because we've talked for weeks about how we expected, or at least a consideration might be that he might wait all the way up until training, maybe even weeks into training camp, to sign in order to get as many teams pursuing him as possible, in order to potentially have injuries occur with other teams, make other teams more desperate. Instead, he's the one who agrees to terms more than a week before training camp. And he's there are only two teams, as far as we know, that were in the pursuit. So here's a guy that to me is really fired up and ready to go. I think there's reason to believe that he can break this sort of streak of the aging wide receivers that haven't fared well here. You do look at the fact that he has had some injuries the last couple of years. He had the MCL and a hamstring issue in 2021. I had a little bit of a flare up with the knee last year, but really the MCL is the only significant injury that he has dealt with, but throughout his career for the most part. And then as far as whether he's in decline or not, I think if you go back and you look at last year, the games that he played with Kyler Murray, Arizona's starting quarterback, only played four games with Kyler Murray because either Murray was hurt. Or DeAndre Hopkins was missing either for injury or for the PED suspension. But in those four games, 30 catches, almost 400 yards, three touchdowns. He was averaging 13 yards a catch. That's pretty good. It's a pretty good indication that when he is still playing with a respectable top-flight quarterback, he is at the top of his game. So I like it. Are there reasons for concern? Yes. The age. The downfield ability is not quite as great as it was, nor is the yards after catch as great as it was. But I still think that the Titans are getting the top flight receiver. And we know, as desperate as the Titans were, they had to make this happen with the wide receiver room that they had.
And Let me ask you this, Denard, real quickly too. That the first couple of days of training camp, I think players are excited to get back to work, do all those sorts of things. For this locker room, particularly the guys on offense, how much more juice does this give them as they're getting ready to come to town and get this thing going? Are those guys much more excited than they were a couple of days ago now?
Man, this kind of move, David, it will galvanize a unit. I mean, you're talking about one of the most explosive receivers in the league over the last decade. David, this just brings so much excitement. It brings an expectation. Now, it raises the expectations. Before, I didn't have Tennessee as a potential Super Bowl contender if they was to go into this season with that receiving core that we thought was going to be on paper. Now that you add D-Hop to the mix, David, I'm telling you something. This opens up new doors now because now you know that you have one of the most explosive receivers over the last decade. Not to mention, you have a young and up-and-coming stud in Treylon Burks. I went back and watched Burks last season. I just watched some of the games. And I go back the game against Green Bay where he had, what, that 111 yards with seven receptions. This is what made Treylon really stand out is that he was going one-on-one with Jaire Alexander. Jaire
This is a
Alexander
pretty good player, by the
pretty
way.
good. They paid him what was it, 60 some million? It was 66 million. I stopped counting after 50. And I'm thinking to, that's why I said I can't stand these young boys, they getting paid. But he went against Jaire Alexander. They matched him up. And David, do you remember David and John? It was at the end of the game, and Tennessee had that little drive, and he had that long bomb. Ron hits Treylon. And I'm like, you know what? Jaire didn't have a he didn't have a chance. But then you can go back in that Philly game. The only bright spot on offense that game, and really what turned the tide. Is when Treylon went out the game. They didn't have any other offense other than Derek. But what I love about Treylon is we saw that explosiveness. We saw how he can top the defense. Now, what happens when you bring D-Hop into the equation? What's going to happen? That creates what we call mismatches on the other side of the ball. So, if you're a defender, the question is if you're a defensive coordinator, who do you double? We talked about that last week. Who do you double? Do you say, well, when I look at that film, if I'm a defensive coordinator, I'm going to double Treylon Burks and I'm going to say, hey, listen, D-Hop said he can still get over 1,000 yards receiving. Well, this would be a great chance to prove it because now you're going to create a lot of one-on-one matchups.
Exactly, and you could make the argument now that the biggest remaining question for the Titans is the offensive line, and in a lot of ways now the pressure is on that offensive line to get sorted out and get it and make sure they give Ryan Tannehill the time to distribute the ball to these targets that he has who are going to have so many better options now. It's on the line to create holes for Derrick Henry so that teams still have to respect the run and sell out at points to try and stop him. And John, you mentioned it earlier. The Titans reportedly will work out veteran tackle George Fant this weekend and possibly another big addition coming in here before training camp. A guy who's a Bowling Green, Kentucky native, played at Western Kentucky, so he's just up the road from just up the road. This would be sort of a homecoming for him. You feel like this is going to happen too?
I think it's the best solution out there right now. I think for one thing, generally with an offensive line, even though they'd only just had the off season together so far, you like to try to keep a position secure, like to keep guys in the same spot, let them gel a little bit, develop a little chemistry with one another. And so this, assuming they go ahead and sign George Fant and bring him in at right tackle, that allows you to keep all the other four positions the same. There's a thought that maybe Daniel Brunskill, the right guard, might move over there because he has played right tackle in the past. And then all of a sudden you're mixing and matching other spots, trying to fill other positions. This allows you to keep those other positions the same. And it also, instead of turning that position over to a rookie like Jalen Duncan, a sixth-round draft pick who hadn't played that much right tackle, or kind of a journeyman, swing man in Jamarco Jones, who also has not played that much right tackle. This to me is the best of all possible solutions. It's not perfect. George Fant did not actually have a great year last year. He actually played only 8 games, was dealing with a knee injury much of the year, gave up 5 sacks, took 7 penalties. Numbers were not good, PFF. But there's probably a reason for that, and that is it sounds as if the knee injury he suffered at the end of 2021 still bothered him for much of last year. But if they can get the George Fant back to the form of previous to last year, it's a solid, a good right tackle. In 2021, I think it was only gave up 1 or 2 sacks and 600 pass blocking snaps. Good PFF numbers. A guy who's had big time experience at the position, hundreds of snaps over the years at right tackle, 60 starts in the NFL. So I think that is the way to go. We don't know any contract numbers. There is no contract yet, and I'm sure the Titans are going to get probably stung by it a little bit. But what are you going to do? You're in a pretty desperate position due to the suspension of NPF, something the Titans didn't have direct control over. So this is the recourse that you have to take, and I think this is a wise move if they can get it done.
Yeah, you talk about his experience and his 60 starts. That's more starts than any of their projected starters at offensive line right now have. Daniel Brunskill has the most career starts of that group right now with 42. Then you got Aaron Brewer with 23. Petit Frere, who's going to miss the first 6 games, the reason we're talking about maybe adding a George Fant, started obviously last year. Andre Dillard, 9 career starts, and then of course Peter Skoronski has none as a rookie. So Denard, you bring in a guy like that, what would you expect the immediate impact to be, and would he be expendable once a Nicholas Petit Frere comes off the suspension, or do you think a guy with that kind of experience, it'd be worthwhile to hang on to him and keep him around for the whole season if he, assuming he's playing the way you think when you get to week 7?
Well, the big man said, he quoted that the only thing the Titans had to do was to call him, and it's pretty much a done deal. So that obviously tells you he wants to come to Tennessee, and not to mention he's from what, Bowling Green, and went with Western Kentucky. I had a chance to watch Big George. He was a What's interesting is Big Fant, man. He was a what I can converted tight. He was a tight end. And what's weird is that you will see him on a lot of those, what they call that hybrid tight end position, where they bring in like that ineligible receiver. He's a he, what he would add, at least in my opinion, he would add depth to this offensive unit. When I look at this offensive line, we know that Dillard, he's got to play at that left tackle position because of what they paid him. You talk about Daniel Brunskill at the guard, and I'm just anticipating this is the starting lineup. Aaron Brewer, I think Big Roos is going to win that right guard position. And then you got Peter Skoronski moves out to your right tackle. So what George meant, what he offers to this unit is just depth, John. Not to mention, and what was that in 2020? He signed a big deal with the New York Jets. What was it, like a $30 million contract, started 13 games, and he played both left and right. So, David, if you can bring in a player of that quality, then what you end up getting is a player that can play on both sides right now while you have Nicholas Petit Frere serving as suspension. So this can be a huge addition to that offensive unit in 2023.
Yeah, and another move that I think would again, like adding DeAndre Hopkins, it would sort of allay a lot of fears among the fan base, because there is a lot of uncertainty with that offensive line, and there's quite a bit of inexperience. And if it does work, I would say your scenario, Denard, is the best case scenario. If you don't need this guy to start for even the first 6 weeks, and he's your swing tackle, that gives you a lot of flexibility and a lot of comfort, and relative to what you've had to this point in the off season. It's again, assuming this deal gets done, I think the one thing we ought to be able to give Brand Carthen credit for in his first few months in as a general manager is patience. You know, he didn't just throw money around early in the free agency just to say, look at what I'm doing here. He made some moves, but didn't, you know, wasn't in a rush just to get to 90 guys on the roster and say, okay, here we are, let's go. And we should say, speaking of the 90-man roster limit, that it looks like free agent rookie running back Chuck McClelland is the guy who is going to be released to make room for DeAndre Hopkins. At least his agent has said that that he will be back on the street and available to other teams. So good luck to Chuck McClelland. But while we're talking about running backs, most of the league has been talking about running backs the last few days because Saquon Barkley, Josh Jacobs, Tony Pollard all saw the deadline for guys on franchise tenders to saw that deadline pass and that without getting long-term contract extensions. So their only choices now are to play this season on the franchise tag, which is a little over $10 million, that's not guaranteed until they play in week one, and or they just sit out. And Saquon Barkley has said that he considers that an option. Interestingly, Derrick Henry stepped up on social media, and a guy who typically tries to say as little as possible to the media, who tries to, you know, not create waves at all, but sort of, you know, answers questions just out of a sense of duty and responsibility, which I think, you know, that's fine. That's certainly his prerogative. He was one of the most outspoken and most interesting in terms of public reaction to this to this point. John, you know, what did you make of Derrick Henry's comments? How surprising was it to you what he said? And why don't you run down for us exactly what he said?
Yeah, he basically said, "Hey, if this is kind of the respect you're going to give to running backs, if this is the way you value running backs, go ahead and take the position out of the game. You know, if it's not that important, yeah, who needs it then?" And I was surprised because Derrick Henry isn't a guy who generally rocks the boat and brings attention, you know, upon himself in that way. But you know, one thing you maybe have to wonder about a little bit is, you wonder, is Derrick Henry maybe also thinking a little bit ahead to next year, you know, when he will not have a contract and maybe wondering what lies in store for him, a running back who'll be over 30 at that point, and kind of wondering what his value be when you see guys like Dalvin Cook getting released. You see Joe Mixon, you know, taking a big pay cut to stay in Cincinnati, and the three backs that you mentioned, Jacobs, Barkley, and Pollard, all getting, you know, just the franchise deals, franchise tags. You know, I'm sure there's some questions going round and around with Derrick Henry as well. But you know, it's I understand certainly where Derrick Henry and the other running backs are frustrated, but I'm not sure, you know, I certainly don't think it's a vast conspiracy on the part of owners to say we don't like running backs and we're not going to pay them. I think, you know, I mean, it's a salary cap sport. You divvy up your money as best you decide. You know, and it's pretty clear right now that owners and general managers and coaches are saying that running back is not the most important for them, that other positions, quarterback, wide receiver, you know, tackles, edge rushers, cornerbacks, just like Denard, are all, you know, more important than than running backs at this point. Running backs, basically, what the league is saying, in effect, is running backs are a dime and a dozen for the most part, not all, but for the most part. And they are replaceable, especially when it comes to offering that second contract. You know, it just doesn't seem to be worth it. So that's where it stands. And then there are some various solutions that have been proposed that are kind of interesting. You know, that I have seen. You know, one is maybe make running backs 3-year rookie deals instead of 4. You know, that way they get to that second contract a little quicker, less wear and tear. Another one has said that okay, maybe we have one franchise tag for all wide receivers, tight ends, and running backs. Basically, a playmaker franchise tag instead of just the running backs. And then I saw one Pro Football Talk. This sounds a little loony, but some kind of a league-wide provide fund that would pay running backs for yards, TDs, and playing time. Not sure that one would work, but all these solutions I think would have to be negotiated, obviously, between the NFLPA and the NFL. And the CBA, as it stands right now, goes through 2030. So in the short term, I don't know if there's a real great solution. I understand the frustration and pain of running backs and Derrick Henry, but I just don't know, how to fix supply and demand at this point.
Yeah, I think it's a classic case, and certainly the notion of a 3-year contract, rookie contract for running backs, for example, that speaks to it. I don't know if it's that if it's that teams think running backs are a dime a dozen. It's that you want to pay for what a guy's going to do, not what a guy has done. And you just see so often, it seems like, running backs sort of hit that cliff and they fall off in production very suddenly, very and it's almost like you go from earning every penny to just being almost useless to teams. And your point about Derrick Henry going into a contract year saying something like this is well taken. And Derrick is a guy who I think, I think the way the Titans used him and the production he showed in 2019, 2020 sort of has fueled a resurgence in teams being willing to ride with one running back. You look at what's happened with Jonathan Taylor the last couple of years. You look at what happened with Josh Jacobs when, all the, up until 2019, the back half of 2019, really, everybody's saying, well, you need two running backs. It's got to be a platoon system. And Derrick Henry has sort of reminded the league that no, if you've got a guy who's big and strong and fast and tough enough, just keep giving him the ball and let him beat down on defenses. And Henry, we've talked about it with his workouts and the way he takes care of his body and his willingness to do all the things to get ready. As he gets older, if his production doesn't fall off significantly, I think he can sort of change some perception in terms of how long teams should be willing to pay running backs too. Whether that works out for others, obviously we'll have to see. We'll have to see what Derek does in this year, his contract year, possibly his last year with the Titans. But Denard, you were talking about big contracts earlier. Do you have any sympathy for running backs, or do you see this as just part of the cyclical nature of the NFL and it'll come back around at some point?
I have sympathy because I have sympathy for all players that play that game. And there's no harder position in this league than running backs because David and John, you are always getting hit. We saw that. Well, this goes back way before any of us was probably, before I was here. I remember when Earl Campbell, when he played 8 seasons, and what was it? How many years he played in Houston? Was it the 78 through 84? And we saw kind of at the end how Earl was just kind of beat up. And Earl ended up getting another job in New Orleans because Bob Phillips went to New Orleans to become the Saints coach. But what was interesting, David, the reason that I have sympathy for running backs is this, David, and this is alarming, is that the average salary, David, and I was reading this by the LA Times, it says the average salary for a kicker is greater than that of a running back. Kickers are averaging about $2.26 million a year. Running backs are averaging about $1.81 million a year. David, that's called a disparity in this league, kickers to running back. And then you know what this goes back up on? This goes back up. You remember when Todd Gurley back, it was that in 2020, he signed that massive $57 million contract with the Rams. He was the talk of the town. And what was it like a couple of months later after that knee injury? He was released 3 months after signing that contract. That right there tells you what this league, how they value running backs. There's an old saying, it says, mamas don't let your babies grow up to be running backs. And I'm glad that I didn't fill out my frame and stayed skinny and got moved to defensive back. And I remember, David, and this goes back when I was at Denver, I saw this clearly and I was like, okay, this is ridiculous because I remember when I got there in 2001. Do you remember when Terrell Davis, 95 through 98, he had the best 4 years out of any running any running back in the league and in history other than O.J. Simpson. He signs that massive, in what was it, 1998, that 9-year, $56 million deal. And then he ends up getting that ACL injury in 99. He never was the same. So when you look at when I got to Denver, they had this what we call running back by committee. They end up plugging in Landis Gary and he ended up replacing Terrell Davis. Orlandis Gary goes over 1,000 yards. He gets hurt. Orlandis Gary goes, when he goes down, Mike Anderson steps up. He rushes over 1,000 yards. And then all of a sudden, Clinton Portis is drafted in the second round in 2002. And then after Clinton Portis leave to go to Washington, because Denver wouldn't give him a massive, they didn't give a massive deal. They end up plugging in Reuben Drones, who was an undrafted free agent out of Oregon. He ends up rushing for 1,000 yards. What message is they're sending is that it's not so much the running back, David, it's the system. And that is wrong. You got to, hey, if you don't have a quality running back in this league, you won't win. And I tell you what, I mean, I to Derrick Henry, congratulations for stepping up. And to Saquon Barkley, I commend you for sending the finger to New York. And it wasn't the ring finger that he sent to tell organization, this is what I think about your, excuse me, not getting a deal done.
Yeah, if they
I was.
if those guys play this year on the franchise tag, they will not be among the top 200 highest paid players in the league. So you're telling me that there are 200 players worth more than Saquon Barkley and 200 players worth more than Josh Jacobs. That's a tough argument to make.
Not this year, but in 4 years, that's the question that has to be answered. But I'm just gonna, I know we're running out of time. I was gonna, real quick, I was gonna point out Chris Johnson, CJ2K on his podcast here recently, was coming up in defense of the running backs too. And he brought up the year that after his great, or yeah, really good 2010 year, he held out for a new deal and said, hey, I'm not just a running back, I'm a playmaker, so pay me like a playmaker, not just a running back. And the Titans eventually came around to that way of thinking, got a 4-year, $53 million deal. Unfortunately, he got cut 3 years later, and he never gained the same amount of yardage that he did in 2010. So he kind of defeated his argument just a little bit in that regard. So that's kind of the question that execs have to face with running backs, I think.
Yeah, it's and we'll, that'll be one of the big storylines next offseason, at least early part of next offseason, what Rand Carthen will want to do. Rand Carthen, a former running back, by the way, will want to do with Derrick Henry. But we will be diving into the 2023 season head first next week. Until then, Denard Walker, thank you, sir.
Thanks, David. I got one thing to say. It was actually 2 years after signing that deal, David, not 2, 3 months.
All right. Yes, of course. John
Same thing.
Glennon,
Cut it.
thank you.
You.
And for everybody listening, thank you. This is the Believe in Titans podcast.